This is ABC Riverina, and this is Digital Living with Anne Delaney, and from Charles Sturt University, Dr. Barney Dalgano, Peter Adams, and Phil Roy. This is ABC Riverina, and this is Digital Living, and here we are, barely 2 months away from Christmas, and already we're back talking gadgets again for 2009. This time, Pete, what have you been researching?
Well, it's a bit of a tradition, Anne. We usually sort of talk early in the year because there's this huge thing called the Consumer Electronics Show held in Las Vegas early every year. So we like to sort of finish the year with gadgets. We didn't quite start the year with gadgets this year, but we're close enough. And it's always a good barometer of, you know, what's out there, what the companies are doing. And interestingly enough, of course, with the current economic climate, TVs are always a theme because TVs are like the centre of most households' universe and trying to integrate with it. But there's lots of interesting little gadgets that we've found popping up all over the place. So I don't actually know where we want to start with this because the boys have been heavily researching all sorts of mad gadgets.
It really does come down to the things that caught your eye, the wish lists. So Barney, what sort of things attracted your attention?
Well, one of the things that attracted my attention is something that I've been really looking for a really long time, and that is some way, when I'm listening to the radio and I hear a really good song, to be able to keep a note of the song so I can, you know, later buy it. And it seems to me that, you know, there must be a big market for this. Well, there's this thing that's come out from Pioneer. It's called the Tag and Bag Radio.
What a good name.
And what it does is exactly that. When you hear a song that you like, you press a button and it somehow tags it so that you can buy it from iTunes later. So it's hooked in somehow.
So it kind of puts it in a basket for you.
It's very little detail here, so I don't have a lot to sort of... I can't explain how it works. It's something we might do a show on down the track. But what I gather is that there's this new technology called RDS that FM stations can sort of incorporate into their broadcast so that it's sending like a text stream alongside the audio stream, and that if you've got a radio that can pick it up and understand it, your radio then knows that that actually is a song, you know, that is, you know, Missy Higgins singing her... whatever her latest song is.
That's why you need it, Barney.
Exactly. Well, I've got the worst memory in the world. I know I like it, but I just, you know, that nice voice, that song about something, you know.
This will be a godsend for radio stations across the globe because one of the most frequent phone calls we get is not about anything that's, you know, the news or the weather or, you know, wanting to talk to us on the radio. It's about a song people heard about 3 years ago. They don't remember what it was or who sang it. They can hum a few bars. If we have this tagging system, we will never get those phone calls again. People will be able to just go click, and that will be the song.
What, they don't ring up wanting old Digital Living podcasts?
Oh, all the time, Pete. Swamped.
So presumably it's got some sort of removable media in it or something, because if you're in your car and you have to tag it, it's somehow you've got to get it from the device into your, you know, your internet account. So it's either going to have to transmit it to your phone to take away with you or put it on like a little memory card or something. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to follow it through. And, of course, we should point out that a lot of the things that go on at these shows are prototypes as well. So it'd be interesting to see how far it actually is into production.
Well, I suspect it'll be the first of a whole series of products in that area. And, I mean, the standards will evolve and eventually we'll get to the point where the common standard, all the radio stations are supporting it, all the radios support it, and you can plug it into, you know, maybe plug straight into your iPod. So next time you sync your iPod, it comes up and says, here's a list of songs that you've earmarked for purchase.
And you can import
like
them and you can buy them and import them and off you go. The next step too would be for commercial radio particularly, that you can do the same thing for the products. And I know we've talked about this with regard to TV and internet and convergence, but doing the same thing on the radio. If you really like that paint sale, you can press a button and find out more, get stuff into your inbox because you wanted to find out more about it, something along those lines.
Well, I think the problem with all these things is having that standard. You need that market dominance where the standardisation of the tagging, you can go to, you know, one site, and can you just imagine all the commercial radio stations agreeing to a standard so that you could go into their advertisers?
Because there's such a warm, friendly bunch around the table.
Yeah, because I mean, if I was running a commercial radio station, even with the current system, and you were going to one particular company's sort of song sales site, you'd be saying, well, you know, you heard it here. How about the commission for the reference? So it'll be interesting to see how much detail it can actually tag.
Well, it's a bit like that sort of whole thing about the electronic program guide that we've talked about before. You know, the television stations are only just getting to the point now where they're sort of agreeing on common standards and common ways of doing that. And I guess it's radio stations will, you know, get into that next. But they're a bit more of a disparate bunch, I guess. There's more of them.
So, Phil, what about things that attracted your attention?
The one that poked up my interest, Anne, was a Polaroid Pogo instant digital camera. So this is a little bit of a retro thing happening with new technology.
A bit of walnut grain on the side.
Yeah. So Polaroid have released a digital camera which has instant printing with it as well. So it's a 7 megapixel camera. It's sort of the it's a bit bigger than a little digital camera, but you could fit it in a coat pocket, I suppose. 12 centimeters wide by 7.62 centimeters high by 3.3 deep. And the I suppose the innovative part of this one is that you can slip in a little cassette of 2x3 inch paper that's zero ink paper. So in other words, you don't have to have a little ink cartridge somewhere in the camera. The technology is you slip the paper in, you can take a photo, then if you choose to print it off on the spot, and out it comes on a little 2x3 inch printed photo.
So the era of the Polaroid returns.
Funny you should say that, Ian. Because this computer electronics show in Las Vegas is massive. Like, you're talking about 130,000 people, almost 3,000 exhibitors, I think something like 2,700. The whole floor space is
Acres.
29 football fields. Like, it is massive.
Wow.
But, of course, in Las Vegas, what do you reckon was next door?
Well, what was next door?
Well, the Polaroid's a hint. The Adult Entertainment Expo was run at the same time, so I'm sure that when they were picking sites in that massive area, I know where the Polaroid people would have been placing their little stand.
Seeing the merger of those two markets doesn't surprise me at all.
No, I just can't imagine, internet geeks and the Adult Expo. Well, it's just pure coincidence, you reckon?
So when are you going, Pete?
Yeah, no, we don't go there.
And here I was thinking you were going to say it was the National Photographers Convention or something next door.
Oh, no. I thought we could sort of hang off the digital camera jokes for another show or two.
Yeah, we can milk that for a little while yet, Phil, a little while yet. So what about yourself? What have you found?
Oh, there was actually heaps of quite divergent things. On the broader scale, it's interesting that the gadgets broadly almost reflect the bigger issues in society and in technology. So, of course, more green, sort of resource-friendly devices, promoted that way, I should say.
So
eco-friendly, yeah, and different things. So there was two. The sort of the simple one, I guess, is Motorola released a phone called Renew. And what's really interesting about the phone isn't that it does anything fancy. It just does pretty average phone stuff. But the whole thing is actually made entirely of recycled water bottles. So Motorola is promoting it as the world's first carbon neutral phone.
I know we're talking about the product itself has been reconstituted and then used in the phone, but I've just got this mental image of the water bottles. Right.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they've been reshaped to look like
just
a phone.
Just a smidgen, yeah.
The picture certainly makes it look like a phone, but so that was Motorola's big thing. And of course, there was it seems every year someone's got the Dick Tracy phone.
Of course.
So LG's got the wristwatch phone, which is actually a video phone, not just a cellular phone. So that was interesting. And
so you wouldn't want to do that accidentally, though, because if it's a video phone too, you get a really good look up someone's nose for the next 3 hours. Accidentally call you.
And then just standing there talking to somebody is bad enough, people standing with phones, let alone talking having to their listen, wrist in front of them.
Having to list to you is bad enough without having to see you at the same time.
The only exactly thing you could do, if you did do that, is you would have to go the dark glasses, the fedora, and the coat. You'd have to go the whole hog. I mean, you'd have to play Secret Service a little bit, wouldn't you?
That's right, yeah.
Just a little. You'd have to
wonder. And television. So there was a lot of televisions displayed with some emerging technology called OLED, which uses less power and can be doesn't require being backlit. So
because we know what LEDs are.
Mm.
But what's an OLED?
So this organic LED, which is what the O stands for, actually uses less power, doesn't require to be backlit, and because that's the case, they can make them much thinner. They can actually make them on relatively flexible surfaces. So you can have the big widescreen TV with almost no profile, but I think one of the downsides of the technology is the organic bit. Presumably there must be, I don't know what the organic bit is, but it doesn't actually have a huge shelf life. I mean, they're talking about 3 or 4 years.
Plutonium, something along that. It's got a good shelf life.
I don't think you want to pay, and they're horrendously expensive. But a lot of the manufacturers had demonstration models there, apparently.
Wow.
But, I mean, you're not going to go and spend a fortune on a TV that's likely to have the organic things head back home in 3 or 4 years. You probably want your telly to last at least 10 years. So that was the sort of relatively straightforward technology stuff. But the thing, you know, being a, like an outdoorsy type, not spend too much time on the computers, I actually liked the Swiss Army knife that converged with...
Wait for it.
Converged with the Gadget Man. So this is actually a presentation pro Swiss Army knife.
Yep.
So it's got an inbuilt laser pointer.
Nice.
A Bluetooth remote control for your presentation. So you can just imagine, like, going to your presentation, like, what, you're going to fly there with your knife in your pocket. So that's a whole other issue. And USB storage. And biometric fingerprint security.
Oh, nice.
So you could. So it all works really well, except you get on a plane and they confiscate your knife.
So it does actually have a knife that's got a blade on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's the whole Swiss Army knife.
So you're allowed to threaten your audience if they don't, like, pay attention.
Yeah, get the scissors out. I just can't imagine anybody use that level of the big sales pitch. I don't think having the knife in their pocket.
And lots of scope to use it when you're camping.
Yes, yes. Well, I think actually there's also some of the things at the Computer Electronics Show were that people have been trying to make them for a few years, but a couple of people are demonstrating the actual projector, like phone. So, you know, basically either a mobile phone or a personal organiser that you can actually hold it, and it's got the projector and projects your presentation, so you can stand there and actually hold it at the wall so you can present anywhere. You imagine how that'll go down with those super salesmen. Run into them in the shopping mall. I'll just come over here to this nice white wall and I'll give you the quick sales pitch.
No. This is getting too scary. Although,
well, I would have thought it would have suited Barney with his sort of his want for having walls that are, you know, image projection walls. Maybe you could have one on the tent so that when you've got your pocket knife out camping,
now that would be cool.
You can use it to control the image that's on the side of the tent.
Or just pick up a sort of, you know, wireless TV signal or whatever and just, you know, watch TV, you know, projected on your tent when you're camping.
Isn't that why you go camping?
Oh, yeah.
You get to get rid of it, get
the
away
wonderful
from all
things
that.
You can do outdoors.
Yeah, you can plug the charger into the nearest tree. It's all good.
It's good.
So one thing I noticed, and to be honest, I haven't looked into it, is that this Palm Pre phone won a couple of awards at the show. The best one, it won Best of CES and People's Choice Award.
Well, they're big awards.
Yeah, well,
the
two big ones.
Yeah. What is it?
Well, it's the competitor to the Apple iPhone. And interesting, I just can't think who said it, but in my sort of like reading through of the show and various reports, somebody who was fairly well placed thought it was one of the most interesting items released for the last 10 years in phones, which is a big call when the iPhone's been released.
Exactly. It was supposed to be the big thing. Mm.
But what's really interesting is that the executive chairman, John Rubinstein of Palm, joined Palm in 2007. And guess what John did before he went to Palm? He helped create the iMac and the iPod at Apple.
Yeah, right.
So there's a lot of intellectual property that's going to help in having all these nice features for this pre-phone, I'd imagine. So it's actually, I mean, I'm a big fan of the early Palm products, so I'd be really interested to see this phone once it hits the market and give it a bit. We might even do a show later in the year and do a bit of a head-to-head once more details.
Because they really did start the market with things with the little handhelds, with the PDAs, the Palm Tungsten and stuff. They were ones where when it almost became almost to the stage where the company name became the generic name. They almost got to that stage, except they started to get a few other competitors. But you reckon this Palm phone will go for
them? Yeah, well, I had a bit of a look at a few of its features. It's got a touch-sensitive gesture area, which sounds very much like the iPhone. I mean, one of the features of the iPhone is that really cool way
you can
squeeze
the screen
and
put
your fingers
it
on it, then pull your fingers apart and expand or contract the size of a web image, for example. So that's neat. But it's also full multitasking. Apparently the iPhone struggles with having multiple applications running at a time, but the new Palm OS, which they're calling Web OS, the operating system behind behind this phone, actually allows you to have an application and sort of minimise it but hold its state so that you can, you know, put your calendar aside while you go and check an email or check a web page or whatever, and then jump back to what you were doing in setting up your calendar. So it's got some nice features. But looking at the picture of it, I reckon it looks really busy. I mean, I think the iPhone, it's the simplicity and the interface is just really immediately attractive, whereas you look at the picture of the Palm Pre, and it just looks sort of really busy. I don't know. What did you guys reckon?
Yeah, I mean, that's what thing that Apple's always done best is the interface, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter what
it's always user-friendly.
It's simple. I mean, they work on the principle of making it simple, and, I mean, the Palm Pre's got a slide-out sort of QWERTY keyboard, But you've got to wonder why the sort of touchscreen keyboard isn't the better option.
Isn't there some bad press about the iPhone's touchscreen keyboard, though? Maybe
maybe if you've got big fingers. I guess by the time you put the keyboard on the screen, whatever you're trying to type into, you don't have that much real estate left.
Yeah, it's tricky.
But no, so the touchscreen, but there was more important touchscreen technologies there, of course. They had the Coke vending machine, fully touchscreen. I'm quite sure why that's such a big deal, but it got a mention at the CES. But interestingly enough, sort of an extension of the touchscreen discussion, Stevie Wonder, amongst other people, were actually at the CES going and talking to vendors about the issue of everybody making everything touchscreen.
Yeah, I was going to say, he'd probably have a few things to say about vision-impaired people.
It was pretty high-profile sort of protest, I guess, for want of a better description, and there's people who are visually impaired are just saying, look, the more and more things go touchscreen, you're just cutting us out of the market.
Well, I guess they just need the next generation touchscreen, which has got texture. Saying it exists. I'm saying that's what's needed,
though. That is the next logical step.
If you could actually feel that, so that you could, sort of use Braille or something superimposed as a texture, transparent, so that it doesn't affect the visual appearance, and then it would sort of work.
Mm. Which you'd think has potential. But and even, I guess, the voice prompts and things. But, yeah, it's sort of an interesting angle that I guess is that, they're chasing the consumer market that manufacturers certainly don't always think of.
So Stevie Wonder wouldn't be interested in NVIDIA's new 3D vision goggles then, which is...
3D, okay. 3D goggles.
Yeah, there was a bit of 3D TV stuff going, Barney, so you would have loved it.
Yeah, well, there's been 3D goggles around for ages, but these ones look like they're nice.
Most of them, Barney, were on the back of comics we read in 1972.
Yeah, well, there were some good ideas back in 1972,
you
and
got the
some
X-ray
of them are finally
too,
being
you?
Actually implemented now. So, anyway, when Second Life makes its resurgence, we'll be able to do it in true 3D with these 3D goggles that are now available.
So is that your prediction for 2009, the resurgence of Second Life?
Look, I must say that after hearing your cynical comments at the end of last year... the one specifically about Second Life. I have had a little bit of a think, and I'm just a little bit more hesitant about, spending a lot of money on an island or whatever.
Yeah.
I just want to hear a few more people's views on it first.
Well, and the world real estate market in physical real estate's gone down, so virtual real estate probably could have suffered in the economic downturn as well.
Yeah, it might be cheaper to actually buy a real house now than a
virtual one. Yeah. An associated article I came across, Anne, which is all about the consumer electronics sort of stuff. There's been some figures released about the uptake of Blu-ray in Australia over the past 12 months, which is quite interesting. So I suppose they're talking it up as a manufacturer would, but estimate about 5% of Australian households have a Blu-ray player at the moment, and that with players dropping below $400 for a Blu-ray player, that they're expecting it to pick up even more. There was about just under 1 million copies of Blu-ray movies sold in Australia last year. And the figures...
Which isn't really many.
Well, no, it's probably not relative, but it's the speed that this thing is picking up. In August, there was 3,000 players sold. In October, 6,600. And then in December, 20,000, I suppose. That's the Christmas factor there. But they're still saying that the vast majority of them are PS3s, the games console. Mm. But compared to the release of DVD, it's running, by the looks of things, about 12 months quicker than the uptake of DVD was. So they're sort of measuring from the point that this thing enters the market, whereabouts is it in its uptake? And they're saying this is happening a lot quicker than what it did with the standard DVDs.
So. Why should we care about Blu-ray?
It's the high definition. So a lot of people are buying the high definition televisions, and a standard DVD provides a standard image that you play on your television. Blu-ray provides a high definition media that you can use to rent movies or buy them or whatever.
And if you're wondering what it does look like, it is the same. That if you've got a PVR, if you've got digital television at home, if you've got your set-top box, switch back over to the normal telly for a minute. Then switch back to your digital TV and notice the difference. And it really is that stark when you go into a Blu-ray disc.
So I've
got... You think, how good it's going to be. But it is, it does get...
I've hired a few Blu-ray movies from the video store, and it's stunning. I really noticed the difference.
Yeah, you don't realise how good it is until you
compare. Look at it and you think, blimey, this is actually incredible.
But you need the telly. I mean, what Anne said, I'm thinking, I'm shaking my head because I don't actually see much difference between analogue telly and digital telly, and it's probably because my telly is the limiting factor. So you've got to have the high-definition telly.
That's right.
In order to, you know, so using a high-definition telly with an old-fashioned DVD versus using it with Blu-ray, you're going to see a huge difference. But if you're trying to play a Blu-ray on an old-fashioned telly, well, you're not going to have the telly to be able to show the difference.
Yeah, you've still got the odd rancorina that goes ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk when you change the channels. Probably not going to get the best out of Blu-ray.
I sort of, when we bought our telly the midway through last year, got a little bit excited and bought a big one.
As you would.
You know, have people come around and say, oh, compensating for something, are we?
But it's safe putting a wall at that end of your house. Yeah.
So it is a bit of a statement, and it wasn't meant to be a statement. I just, like, I walked into the shop, and you see them all there in the shop, and I just wasn't able to image that size or shift in my mind that size into my lounge room. So when I thought, oh, yeah, that looks about the right size compared to all the others, take it home, bloody hell, this thing's half the room. But I do notice that Barney, I sort of thought, oh, you know, you're a bit of an idiot here. You didn't have to get that excited. But when you do watch high definition, you know, through either a Blu-ray disc or through one of the channels or using the games console itself, with a big telly at high definition, it does actually look really impressive and you notice a massive difference.
On a really boring topic. one of the interesting things that was at the show was a thing called an IOSafe Solo, which is really just a backup device.
You know, backup bricks. Devices.
Well, I think one of the things we've talked about a lot in this show before is people keeping their data.
Yeah.
I mean, the most valuable thing about your computer is what you've created yourself. You can always go and get the operating system again. You can always go get the programs. But, of course, it's the you know, everyone's got a digital camera most these days. You know,
That novel that's sitting there unpublished.
That's right.
You'll never get that again.
But, you know, if your house burns down these days, people are probably going to lose years' worth of the family photos. So this is a little backup device and relatively cheap. I mean, they're only talking for 500 gigabytes, about $150 US. And mind you, the way the Australian dollar's going, it's getting closer to 300 Australian. But relatively speaking, it's cheap because they claim this thing can withstand a fire of 1550 Fahrenheit. Anybody can convert that to Celsius.
That's just
for me,
hot,
but,
really
but
hot
very
fire.
Hot, or you can be immersed in salt water for 3 days.
Yeah, because we get a lot of that in the Riverina.
Yes. So I think, you know, relatively speaking, it's somebody's sort of finally realised that, you know, even for a small business at
cheap
home,
insurance.
It is very, very cheap insurance. Not particularly portable, mind you. It's a fairly large brick heavy thing, as it would probably have to be to withstand fire and being thrown in the ocean for 3 days.
But if you're a small business, it'd be certainly worth it.
That is a really good product. Yeah. Because I'm whenever I think about it, and I try not to think about it, the fact that I might not have backed up my computer or, you know, what am I going to do if my office burns down or my home burns down, I get really nervous. But And you know, it's obviously when you're in a corporate environment and you're managing a you know, a big server pool like Phil is, and you probably have off-site backups and you've got a system for, you know, for making sure that, you know, the off things are taken off-site on a daily basis and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
But yourself, you just don't get round to doing it, and it's a real hassle to come up with a reliable off-site backup system. So this avoids
and
the problem.
It's satisfying once every 2 months to do the full backup. It's very satisfying to then go, there we go, I've done it.
Yeah, but what do you do with it? Where do you take it?
I keep it in the drawer.
One at work and one at home.
Yeah, so I've got my home PC is fully backed up, except for some of the, you know, the crap that you don't care about. But I've backed up all the important stuff. It's on a hard drive that sits here at work. I put a little portable hard drive. So I know I've got it, and every couple of months, just do it again, unless I've made major changes, but yeah.
And this might sound really...
And it's anal, yes, I know it's anal.
Yeah, and it might sound anal and a little bit techo, but it's not, because you hear stories about people that have been through a house fire, and people talk about grabbing their photo albums.
Yep.
What do you do in the case of a fire? You've got to grab one thing. What do you grab? A lot of people say, grab the photo album. But, of course, when they're all digital, what do? You can't pick up the computer and take it.
That's right. You know, grab that CPU and fling it over your shoulder.
Quick.
Well, and all your videos these days, I mean, you know, everything is
your
digital.
Family videos.
Yeah. So, you know, you can't downplay the amount of value in having something that will keep those sort of...
And
precious images.
It's not even the fire, of course, because more personal computers these days sold are netbooks and laptops than they are desktops. So people are buying personal computers that are portable. So it's actually more likely that it's going to be stolen, broken, or whatever when you're travelling to and from work or on the holidays. So it's not an unlikely event that you are going to lose all your data. So that was, you know, my one serious attempt. But the most interesting thing, and I know I feel really bad about diverting away from our tradition of the DeLorean.
Oh, no, Pete, you're breaking my heart.
So the DeLorean from Back to the Future didn't make an appearance, but guess who did make an appearance at the Computer Electronics Show? Car, I'll give you a hint. Smart car.
Kit
made an appearance at the Computer Electronics Show.
So long as Kit was Hasselhoff free.
Well, the report that I read was Kit was looking much better than Hasselhoff was.
We all either wanted to have Kit, or honestly, Kit. And it's making a resurgence too. Kit's being a whole new generation of youngsters are now getting to know Kit, because I think there's some stuff coming out about Knight Rider and such. So, yeah.
So have you got that little sort of strip of red lights at the front of your car?
Like a Cylon thing going across the front. Yeah. I have to fit that to the family car.
I'd hate to see it if Angela wins Lotto. Just the amount of ridiculous technology that you buy.
And Phil could take a photo of it.
If you've got a day or so to set up the settings on the digital camera.
So this is the Consumer Electronics Show next door to the Adult Industry Expo. Back again next year for that, so we'll keep an eye and see what turns up for that. But this is one to watch because it's prototypes, it's concepts, it's ideas, and of course we know that these are the precursors to what we'll see out there on the shelves in years to come, and possibly not that far away. So one to keep an eye on for the wish list maybe for the Christmas Gadget Show 2009. Very good. Thank you, lads.
Thanks, Anne.
We trust you enjoyed this ABC Local podcast. We have many others, including some which are sure to raise a smile, such as the Comedy Hour, in which we bring you the best new comedy writing and performance from all over Australia. Find out how to download this and our many other entertaining podcasts at abc.net.au/local/podcast.